And welcome to Talking About Regeneration, the podcast that's about stem cells, gene therapy, and all things regenerative medicine, with perhaps some other fun stuff thrown in for good measure. I'm Kevin McCormack, the Director of Patient Advocacy at the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, or CIRM. We're California's stem cell agency, and we have $5.5 billion to change the face of medicine as we know it. And this podcast will introduce us to some of the people who are helping us do just that. Enjoy the show. Our guest today is Dr. Jan Nolte. She's the head of the Institute for Regenerative Cures at the University of California, Davis. She's also the director of the stem cell program at the UC Davis School of Medicine and the scientific director of the Good Manufacturing Practice Facility at UC Davis. And in her spare time, she's on the board of a fish group and also the editor of the scientific peer review journal, Stem Cells. Jan, welcome to Talking About Regeneration. We'd be delighted you could find time in your already packed schedule to join us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Kevin.
And it's a shame that we don't have visuals for this because Jan is a vision in blue with all these aquariums behind him. But anyway, you'll have to imagine it as we carry on. So as the head of the stem cell program at UC Davis, you obviously have a good sense of all the work that's going on there. And there's a huge amount of work going on there. But what are some of the most exciting, promising and promising projects at UC Davis right now?
Yes, thanks for asking. It is very exciting. I can't wait to get into work every morning and see what's going to happen. There's a liquid nitrogen doer with some cells either coming in or going out every day, going to patients who need them or coming in to be processed in our good manufacturing practice facility. So I also direct the UC Davis Gene Therapy Center. And so we've been doing a lot of CAR T cells as other groups have. And we've treated our first patients here. We also manufacture for UC San Francisco. And I think, you know, the CAR T, the whole field, chimeric antigen receptor T lymphocytes, for those who don't know that abbreviation, I think that whole field, you know, giving cancer patients a second chance at life after relapse, it's just incredibly, incredibly important and very exciting. We're also doing a large number of, hematopoietic or blood-forming stem cell gene therapies, working toward those, some in clinical trials, some working toward that. People listening may know that I initially trained with Dr. Donald Cohn, who has been doing the bubble baby trials with support from CIRM. And we're applying that type of technology to other diseases and disorders. That's always going on. And then we have a big neurological group. We work with the UC Davis Mind Institute and working toward neurological disorders, mostly that affect pediatric patients.
How do you keep track of all that? I mean, it sounds like it's not just kind of a lot of work, but it's so many different varieties, different kind of areas that you're working in.
We have incredible teams, and that's the only way I keep track. I do what's called sequential mindfulness. So we meet team by team. When I'm meeting with the liver team, I'm only focused on that project. When I'm meeting with the CAR T team, I'm only focused on that. Otherwise, I think I could not keep track. I would get all the projects mixed up and forget where they are. There are also really incredible people on each team, and they keep better track than I do, I must say. But when I first came to UC Davis, I came back home. I grew up in Northern California. I went away, trained with Don for 15 years, went to the Midwest for 5, to Washington University. We set up a GMP facility there. And then I came back to UC Davis in 2007 to set up this program. And we, with Professor Gerhard Bauer, we started dreaming of our good manufacturing practice facility. We were lucky enough to get a major facilities grant from CIRM to make this big old warehouse, 109,000 square feet, into a state-of-the-art institute with a GMP facility. When I came here in 2007, we had just a few teams, so it was really easy to keep track of. And now we have 15 different teams. They're basic translational and clinical scientists and researchers, MDs that actually do the trials. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we just meet team by team. And it's right now it's overlapping Zooms all day with different teams.
So let's talk a bit about that, the GMP, the manufacturing facility. Why is something like that so important?
It's so important because we need to be able to take the cells from the patient, bring them into that clean room facility and modify them somehow, in some different way. So right now we're manufacturing for a cancer patient, for instance, and adding the viral vector for the CAR T, the receptor that will recognize his or her cancer. And we are adding that viral vector to the cells in the GMP facility next door. And then when this processing is all done, those cells will go back over to the clinic in our stem mobile, which sounds very fancy, but it's a golf cart. And we'll go back to the cancer center and we'll be infused into the patient. So having this GMP facility right here on site is critically important.
Right. And so when you were talking just now, you talked about the kind of the full range of therapies that you work with, from really early stage discovery work to being testing in people in clinical trials. I know an awful lot of patients and people are interested just in the clinical trials because that's where the treatments may benefit them. But why is it also important to have that full range of research projects going on?
We need to understand exactly what the stem cells are thinking and what the immune cells are thinking. So they know what they're doing. We just have to figure out what they're doing and to know it in intimate detail so that we can best develop these therapies. And that's why we're so grateful to CIRM for funding, you know, not only the clinical trials and the clinics themselves, the Alpha Clinic that delivers the cells to the patients, but also the more basic research to understand the fundamentals of the stem cells. You don't want them doing something that you don't expect. And so we need to learn to channel them in exactly the right direction.
Obviously, when you started there in 2007, the field was still in its relative infancy. And I mean, it's progressed dramatically in that last 15 years. Talk a bit about that.
Yes, it has. So when I first came back here, the CIRM had just been created and you guys were about 2 years old, I think, a year or two old. Mm-hmm. Embryonic stem cells were known, but we were not yet working with, I don't even know if they'd been discovered by Shinya Yamanaka, induced pluripotent stem cells. And so those are cells where we take a little bit of the patient's own skin cells, they have their own DNA, and we turn them back in time by adding some factors to them. And they behave a lot like the embryonic stem cells, not exactly, but a lot like them. And so, you know, the controversies that were surrounding the embryonic stem cells, I think have, you know, diminished over the years, but the induced pluripotent stem cells do not have any controversy about them because it's just a little sample of skin from the patient. And so they can make any tissue, and that's incredible. And that's happened just during the time that I've been here at UC Davis.
But also the fact that we're using what I suppose are being called adult stem cells in ways that we never did before and kind of in so many of the therapies that we're using.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started out, you know, working with adult stem cells, the blood forming stem cells in the bone marrow. That was actually the first stem cell therapy was bone marrow transplant about 50 or 60 years ago, before my time when I was working in the lab. But those are adult stem cells, even if we get them from cord blood after the baby's born. But now we also have the mesenchymal stem cells that can make different tissues along their lineages, their progenitors, bone and cartilage and fat and so a couple of other things. We are working on genetically engineering those to be kind of armored cars that go in and deploy a factor or a cancer fighter or something like that once they get into the tissue, also to try to build new bone. For people who have badly broken or non-healing bones. And so there are many ways to use these adult stem cells. And the induced pluripotent stem cells actually start out with adult or somatic stem cells coming from the patient. And so that's very exciting to be able to do that because it's the patient's exact DNA.
Yeah, the field is really advancing at leaps and bounds. It's almost hard to keep up with it all the time now. But how useful is it for, say, the Institute for Regenerative Cures to be part of a major medical research institution like UC Davis?
Well, it's huge. We're here in Sacramento on the medical or the health campus. And so we need to be right here where we can get the cells from the patients, where we can interact with the MDs seamlessly, where we can deliver the therapies back over to the hospital as soon as they're ready and they're manufactured. It's really great to work with dedicated MDs, nurse practitioners, and clinical teams, CRCs, the whole clinical team who really wants something more for their patients than the standard chemotherapies that they've been offering for so many years. And so it's really an exciting time, and to have the teams all together here on the health campus is really makes it a really vibrant community.
Yeah, and also a lot of these therapies are new, so obviously you need kind of expertise in being able to deliver them in a safe and effective way.
Absolutely, and just to develop them, as scientists, I'm a PhD, and so we might think we know what's the most important thing for a disease or a disorder, but the MDs will tell us because the patients tell them. Yeah. And also, along with that, the families and the patient advocates are critically important to define the natural history of the disease. I mentioned, several pediatric neurological disorders on which our teams are working to understand the natural history of that disorder, and also what is most important to the families. It might not be what we think it is.
That's always interesting, isn't it, when you hear what the families and the patients themselves have to say. I always remember talking to Dr. David Higgins, who's on our board. Yes. And he says, if you ask researchers about Parkinson's disease, they'll say, oh, we have to work on the tremors. Whereas if you ask Parkinson's patients, that may be number 27 or something on the list of all the things that bother them, which like nausea, fatigue, sleeplessness, lots of other things. So we all learn from the patients.
Yeah. And especially with the kids with, seizure disorders, inability to sleep is a common thread through all of those, and that's huge to the families. If only the little ones could get a good night's sleep, then the families could as well.
Yeah.
There are also GI disorders. I mean, there are a lot of neurons in the gut, and we don't tend to think about that. We just think about the brain, as researchers. How do we get that therapy into the brain?
Yeah, this is fascinating work. So what do you think, though, are the biggest obstacles the field is facing now? I mean, obviously, we've come a long way and we're learning more all the time. And with each research project, each clinical trial, we learn more and more, even those that don't succeed. What are the biggest obstacles we're facing?
To me, it's access for all people who need these very elaborate therapies. They're still expensive. We need to be able to deliver them in an equitable manner. I could probably talk for hours on that, but we are very committed to diversity and equal access. Our CEO, Dr. David Lebarski, funded our CAR-T program 2 years ago just so that we could offer all patients CAR-T therapies because the commercial therapies are so expensive, and we are also doing clinical trials to determine the best conditioning before we return the CAR-Ts to the patients. So just education of patient populations, reaching out to patients who might not even know that these options are available to them, and then delivering these therapies to them. It's really at the core of our passions here.
Yeah, and I know that UC Davis and you have been really instrumental in kind of pushing the idea of telehealth so that you can work with patients in Northern California. It's a huge area. And so there's a lot of rural communities that maybe don't have great access to great medical care. They'd have to travel hours to get to you. So obviously telehealth can play a big role in that.
Absolutely. We are one of the leaders in telehealth, and we have a 33 county area that we serve all through Northern California. So for these cell and gene therapies, the patients would come here to receive the cells, but usually they just stay overnight in our hotel that we have here on our Sacramento campus. and then get to go home. And then the rest of the follow-ups would be through telehealth, so they don't have to drive back here, because that's stressful. I grew up in Northern California. My parents lived in Chico and then Paradise, and they didn't want to come. You know, Sacramento was the big city. It was incredibly stressful to come here and handle the traffic and where do you park and just all the unknowns that go along with that. So if they can be in their own home or even at their local doctor, and we can communicate through telehealth, it's important. Now, some people, some of the communities that we're reaching out to, such as migrant farm workers, they might not have access to wireless technology. They might not have cell phones. So one of the important things for our clinical trials is to be able to provide the patients with that so that we can communicate with them.
Right. And you have the Lucha program, is it? Where you're actually going to have Spanish outreach and you have language. Absolutely. Appropriate therapy.
Yeah. Dr. Sergio, he's amazing. And he's been at the forefront of helping to get many of the migrant farm workers vaccinated against COVID, for instance, through education outreach and just the vans that go out and offer it. So we're hoping that, you know, the clinical trials can go also in that direction for those who need it. There's no reason that someone shouldn't be offered a CAR T therapy just because they are not privately insured, for instance.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's been interesting to see this in the last couple of years. We've seen such a huge shift in that direction towards diversity, equity, and inclusion right across the medical field, and a greater awareness that this is something we can't just pay lip service to. We actually have to be really active in addressing it and making the kinds of changes that we need to, which are systemic and going to be huge. But it's great to see that this is happening. And obviously, California, that's such a huge part of what we have to do here as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the issues we face, and I know that it's an issue for most of the major medical institutions, is the kind of the growth of these kind of predatory clinics that offer therapies that haven't been tested in clinical trials, that haven't been proven or approved. And yet they're able to attract patients because they're offering them a sense of hope. They offer them stem cells after a fashion, maybe their own cells, but there's no real evidence of what they're doing is effective. May not even be safe in some cases, and it's certainly expensive, costing thousands of dollars. What can we do, not just UC Davis, but we as a community, as a medical community here in California, to try and address that?
Yeah, we have people reaching out to us all the time, and I'm always so glad that they do with questions about this. So these clinics tend to take fat from one area of your body and to process it somehow and return the cells to a different area of your body, saying that it's going to cure all sorts of diseases. I've worked with the mesenchymal stem cells mostly my whole career. Mm-hmm. They're about 1 in 1,000,000 in bone marrow and a few more than that, but not many more than that in a sample of fat. And so you're not getting stem cells when you get that. You're getting a gamush. Nobody has oversight over it. They're bilking you for your money. FDA needs to approve, if we take the cells out and grow them in any way, that needs to be a clinical trial that goes through the FDA for approval. These clinics are supposed to have a sign on their wall saying not FDA approved, but I don't think they all do when they pop up, you know, in a mini mall next to the 7-Eleven. I don't think they're following any rules. So I just hope that the patients will reach out. You know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on a lot of social media. I try to answer any questions of patients that reach out to me. We have a hotline here for the people who have questions. Our amazing Jane McCluskey handles that and gets questions, refers questions to us if she doesn't know the answer. And just, you know, education is really key. These are not stem cell therapies. They're trying to make money from you.
Yeah. I like that, the gamush. I'm going to use that. This is you're not getting stem cells. You're getting gamush.
Have you ever centrifuged fat? It looks like a gamush. It's just a kind of pulpy, red, icky thing.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, this affects lots of people. I mean, smart people too. I mean, a friend of mine today just emailed me about saying, should I get this therapy?
Yeah.
And I want to be kind of gentle and say, no, it's crazy. It won't work. But, you know, you have to kind of lead them through the science somehow. But yeah,
yes,
it's a big issue.
And some of these places are really good at the hard sell. And they'll They'll even put out articles that they say were published, but if you look at it, it's not in a peer-reviewed journal. It's just their own thing that they kind of copy, you know, they fixed the typesetting and made it look like an article.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're very good. They're very good at marketing, and their websites are often very slick. Yeah. So you could see why some people would be led to believe that what they're offering is legitimate. But looking ahead now, what would you say is the future of regenerative medicine? Where would we be in, say, 5 or 10 years' time?
Well, I hope that a lot of the surgeries that are ongoing will be replaced by cell therapies, injectables. I hope that the CAR-Ts will get to be frontline therapy. So I'm a cancer survivor. I lived through chemotherapy. Fortunately, I'm almost to 10 years now for breast cancer, but you know, chemo's tough.
Yeah.
There are some side effects to the CAR-Ts, but if we could get those to more of the patients as a frontline therapy rather than having to go through chemo and then relapsing, that would be incredible. I'm going to put stem cell gene therapy for many more single gene disorders, where we can just put in a good copy of the broken gene and using AAV and other vectors to help with these different brain disorders and to reliably get the cargo into the brain, especially for gene editing, where we just replace the broken gene, not add a new one.
Yeah. It's certainly an exciting future. I mean, I really do feel that we're part of something that's going to change the face of medicine. So this is an exciting time to be a part of that. But switching gears now, I know that you have you're kind of a big fish lover, and you were just like, how many aquariums do you have at home?
Okay, I have 35 aquariums, but I have an explanation. So so I have Ollie the pufferfish. He's a big 14-inch freshwater puffer, and he's on Instagram, and actually has a TikTok. But I breed fish for the Sacramento Aquarium Society, and there are some fish where now they don't have a natural habitat, so they exist only in aquariums. So they're critically endangered, and we breed these fish and make sure that other aquarists have access to them. So otherwise, these species are going to be lost. And so that's why I have so many different tanks. Plus, I just love them. It's very peaceful. Yeah. I'm looking at a little shrimp tank above my desk right now, and they're just peacefully going around.
I would think with that kind of stress level job that you have, it's good to have something that helps calm you down.
Yes.
I also know you're quite the rock fan.
Yes.
So what are your three favorite groups and why?
Oh, three favorite. Okay. Well, let's see. Not exactly rock, but I really love Lil Nas X and Lady Gaga for their music, their costumes, and what they stand for and their messaging. My all-time favorite rock band is Aerosmith. That was the first album I ever bought, was Rocks. and I really enjoy, people are going to think this is funny, I really enjoy Bret Michaels, and I've always been a Poison fan since Poison first came out in the 80s. I was lucky enough to see Bret Michaels recently at Rock Island Fest in Key West, and I was very happy to see that he was wearing a tank top proudly showing his Freestyle Libre diabetes blood sugar monitor. And so I thought that just because he's diabetic, he's a great diabetes advocate. So I think really having someone like him, you know, wearing this device on stage while he's rocking and running around and doing everything, I think it really normalizes that for young people who also have the disorder. And, you know, we all have something that we're dealing with. And I think just seeing people like him, you know, just like, this is normal. This is what I have. You know, I scan it. I see my blood sugar. I think that really helps normalize different situations that people are dealing with. So
yeah, rock on.
Big fan.
Do you still go and see concerts?
Yes, Rock Island Fest was at the beginning of the year in Key West. Yeah, it was outdoors, so we didn't have to wear masks. It was very interesting.
Well, it's also Florida, so.
Yeah, you know my awesome husband Mark, and he's a rocker, and he has been in several bands, and we love to go.
Oh yeah, it's fun. Anyway, Jan, thank you so much for joining here. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Thanks for the great questions.
Okay, so that was Dr. Jan Nolte, the head of the Institute for Regenerative Cures at the University of California, Davis. I'd also like to thank everyone for listening at home, in the car, the shower, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you again next time on Talking About Regeneration.